Ken Braun, also continuing with us from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. He is their policy analyst. He specializes in fiscal and budgetary issues. In particular, right now, Ken, we're going to we painted a picture of how the budget's looking right now and some of the latest problems with it, and did promise we were going to start discussing the governor's proposal for new sentencing guidelines and how that's going to play into all this. So what's she actually planning? We've heard bits and pieces. What's the deal?
Well, what she's planning to do, or what she's proposed to do, is to change the sentencing guidelines for 232 crimes in Michigan, most of them nonviolent crimes, to reduce the number of people that are in our prisons at any given time. This, on the face of it, seems like it could be, well, I should back up, it's projected to save about a net of about $92 million a year, at least $92 million in the first year that it would be imposed. And on the face of it, it seems like a pretty good idea. Simply, if you look at the numbers, Michigan has about a 22% higher incarceration rate for the most recent year, 2005, that can be looked at than the rest of the country, 22% higher than the rest of the country, 40% higher than the surrounding Great Lakes states. And that 40% figure, if we just got our sentencing, you know, if we just incarcerated people at the rate of our neighbors, we'd be saving $500 million per year. So there appears to be a real, you know, numerical case to be made for getting fewer people, punishing them differently, getting nonviolent offenders out of the prisons, and reducing these very costly means of punishing people. So that's her proposal. And like I said, there's other ways to save money in prisons. There's privatization can save upwards of $200 million as well for just minor reforms. But I think the governor's on to something here, and it should get a serious look.
Well, privatization, let's face it, this government under its current administration, that works both in the legislative and the gubernatorial branch, I mean, executive is not, I don't think, going to be pushing at all toward allowing privatization. I mean, they took, arguably, they took the one instance of privatization in the state and tried their best to sabotage it.
Yeah, and that was, ironically, a prison. But I'm not going against, or I'm not going to let that, you know, the perfect be the enemy of the good. She does have what seems like a money-saving proposal here that wouldn't really, you know, is it going to impact public safety if we have more nonviolent criminals being punished with tethers, being punished by other means rather than putting them in very costly cages? The spokesman for the Department of Corrections, when they introduced this plan, or last week, I should say, asked a pretty good question about this. He said, "Are we going to, or do we have these people in prison because we're afraid of them or because we're mad at them?" The point being, if we're just mad at them, there's better ways, perhaps less costly ways to punish them without also punishing the taxpayers. And I think that's probably the basis of what the plan that they're trying to implement is right here.
And who are we talking about when they say, I mean, obviously this is subject to change, but in general, when they say nonviolent, I mean, that's a wide spectrum in particular. What are they talking about in the governor's proposal as far as who might be eligible crime-wise?
Generally, yeah, it's crimes against people versus crimes against property. So if you're a car thief, you don't use a gun to do it, you're not using a weapon, you're not threatening anybody, you're just stealing something, that's a nonviolent criminal. If you commit fraud, you're a nonviolent criminal. ID theft, that, you know, these sorts of things where you're, you know, demonstrably a dishonest person, but not somebody who, as long as you're living next door to them and you watch your stuff, you're in any danger from them. Not that you want them living next door to you, that's not what I'm advocating, but that's the general trend, is it's not somebody that's physically dangerous to you. Drunk drivers obviously kind of bridge that gap in between the two. They are dangerous, but they're not for violent reasons, they're just very reckless and careless. So those are the kinds of things that you're looking at. If you can let the person out of prison, incarcerate them or punish them in some other way so that they're not a danger to the population around them, that's a nonviolent criminal.
I'm talking to him about the governor's proposal to let nonviolent criminals of certain kinds out and not put them in regular jails and take care of them in other fashions. Are we talking about creating a bureaucracy, Ken, that we create a tether system for everybody? Because I'm picturing you have to have employees to monitor them and so forth.
Yeah, but they're cheaper than put, you know, it's very costly to create small cities full of people who don't want to be there and then hold them against their will and maintain some level of of humane treatment. The estimates I've seen are about $30,000 a year per inmate. So that's a very expensive way to punish people. The governor's proposal would, in some instances, merely downgrade the amount of time that they're going to serve. So you put them on probation for a longer period of time. Something, a little secret that's been going on in the legislature for a couple of years now, is a rash of increasing in sentencing for all sorts of crimes. And so you're putting people in jail longer or in prison longer for the crimes that they're committing in an effort to be tough on crime. The end result of that is, whereas you have a population that would have been there for 8 years, now they're there for 10 years, and so forth. So if we change those guidelines to tell the judges, you know, please sentence in this lower band, then the prisoners we start taking in every year, we're putting in for less and less time, and pretty soon the population itself starts to drop.
Can we really get through with that? Because remember, these higher sentencing guidelines came from a response of the public, with the perception that crime was getting worse in society and we needed to do something about it, if you recall.
Yes, it did, and crime has reduced dramatically across the country since those days. We're talking the late 80s, early 90s there. If you look at the FBI crime statistics, it's plummeted almost everywhere in the country, even in places like New York, which were famously dangerous. Interestingly, New York puts Michigan is the number 11 incarcerating state in the country. New York is way down at 36th. We incarcerate 489 people for every 100,000 of population. New York puts in 351. This is after all of those years of incarcerating more people. So in New York, realized the results as well, but they did it with putting fewer people in prison. Right now, Michigan's violent crime rate is a little higher than the national average. Our nonviolent crime rate, our property crime rate, is significantly less than the national average. So it seems like in here there's room for changing the way we do business and doing it less costly.
So you think we're putting the wrong people in jail, that if we didn't put as many nonviolence and tried to find more of the violent criminals and put them in jail, we'd be better off?
We might be better off if we find more violent criminals. We may just not be doing a very good job of catching violent criminals. I'm not a criminal justice expert. I don't know what the formula is in there that causes that disparity. But if you just look at what we're doing against, say, Illinois, which has almost exactly our rate of violent crime and our rate of property crime, that's one of the states that's nearly 40% less, locking up 40% fewer people per capita than Michigan does. So they're getting the same results, but with a lot less cost.
Some people are going to come back nationally and say that the reason that crime is down is because we're putting so many more people in jail, because although those numbers are down across the country, like you're mentioning, as far as compared to where Michigan is, still I think we're putting a lot more people in jail nationally than we used to.
That is true, and that may have had something, that probably had a lot to do with the drop in violent crime, but it is, I'm looking comparatively between states, and unless we're assuming that Michigan is just an excessively criminal-prone society, I think there's places to look at here. And secondly, I said if we locked up at the rate of Illinois, we'd save $500 million a year. I mean, that's just raw numbers if you look at it. What the governor's proposing is $92 million a year. So this isn't, a huge, making up that huge disparity. It's trimming it along the edges. So, you'd have to see the details of exactly what she wants to do. That would require more legislative scrutiny of it and some honest looks at it. But on the surface of it, the numbers seem to support that she may be onto something.
It's interesting you bring that up, because when you mentioned that Michigan is Michigan a more crime-ridden state, I'd have to question it probably is, at least in theory. And I'm throwing this out here. I'm not saying this is a fact, because I want to see what you think. Because when you look at any state that is, or any country that has ever had massive unemployment, massive amount of social issues as far as bad economy leads to, you end up getting a raise in crime because let's face it, Michigan's one state recession that we're in, and I don't think that's just throwing a cute phrase out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at that, a friend of mine years ago had a statement, and I really think he was onto something, and it holds into play here. He just simply said, people who have nothing left to lose.
Right. The interesting thing, to the extent that that's true, is those numbers I was just quoting you from 2005, I believe showed that Michigan's property crime rate was 10% or so lower than the national average. So if that's what's going on, there are criminals that are being created by our economy are foregoing stealing cars. Actually, car theft is one of the higher places where Michigan's higher. They're foregoing breaking into houses that they know are empty in favor of violent crimes instead. You'd think the first thing that would go up is the property crime rate as people are supplementing their income, but that's not what the numbers are showing.
Of course, it makes it emotional. Let's face it, when you get tore up and you've lost your job and your family's starving and everything's going bananas and you're off, sure, you're off the unemployment rate, I mean, that could lead to some violence in and of itself.
Yes, and is that the same thing as the crimes that are being committed? You know, that somewhat falls under the crime of passion definition rather,
yeah,
than murderers and people doing it in the commission of a crime.
Now, when we look at this, I mean, you can see where I'm coming from. The concern I've got on this is that it's just it's going to be rewarding criminals who are nonviolent and make it, if you do a nonviolent crime, oh, what's the worst they're going to do? Put a tether on me and so forth. I mean, you know, has other states tried this, and is there anything that really shows that it helps when you start lowering incarceration rates?
Well, it's a matter of getting back again to what are we trying to accomplish here. If we're trying to punish these people, we can do it without punishing the taxpayers to the degree that we are now. The tether, you can start envisioning a number of ways in which you can punish these people even perhaps more excessively, sentence them to a house arrest with the tether, put them on that system longer than what you would have put, you know, if they're going to serve a 4-year prison term, put them on the tether for 10 years, and they spend a decade of their life with their freedoms severely restricted, garnish wages. There's, you know, lots of thoughts that you can put forward there, depending on the criminal as well. In some cases, if you've got a very productive citizen with a job that their employer is willing to keep them, then you might end up being able to punish them financially, costing the taxpayers nothing, and accomplish, you know, get your message across if it's somebody that's committed fraud or whatnot. It's just a different way of thinking about how you do punishment. If the goal is public safety, then you put the dangerous people away. If the goal is punishment, then you come up with, you know, kind of the biblical injunction, eye for an eye. Come up with a nonviolent way of punishing a nonviolent criminal, a less violent way of punishing a nonviolent criminal.
Now, that's going to lead to, if she does this on a significant scale, we're going to lead to at least probably one more prison being closed up. And I know that's also tough to get done into the legislature because, boy, every time you talk about closing up any facility, it's like you've just come in and taken away the treasures of avarice against everybody. I mean, you've seen it. Every representative and state senator and local politician going just goes crazy about it whenever you announce something in their neighborhood maybe closing.
This is a very tough political thing to do in terms of going against the perception of being weak on crime, in terms of, like you say, ripping up a community asset that the local legislators are going to get upset about. It's a tough thing to make happen legislatively. It requires everybody to hold hands and say, okay, this is the right, you know, they've got to decide this is the right thing to do, which is ideally the reason you have legislative hearings, is to kind of get everybody on the same page, build consensus, explain why it's a good idea or not, and get these things across. That's the kind of scrutiny that needs to be done of this proposal. It's possible that she's way off base and that they can make a good case that, no, if we let these people out, it'll be a very dangerous situation, or the crime rate's going to shoot up, and lots of other possibilities there. But it needs to have more of a hearing than it's gotten to this point.
This governor makes me, with this proposal, really makes me wonder if she plans on going for any other political office. Because, like you said, it really is a slap in the head as far as appearing weak on crime. Because that's the whole reason, I'm convinced it's the whole reason politicians do gun control laws. And I'm suspicious that's why they do increases in sentencing guidelines, is so they have the appearance of being tough on crime, sometimes when they're not even really doing anything about it.
One of the most important things government can do, and what some of us would argue is one of the few things it should be doing, is public safety. And so this is a core principles type of thing when it comes to public policy, is keeping the public safe. So you have to be very careful with it. And it is a hot-button issue and causes all sorts of problems. The governor, you know, with her having been born in Canada, can't run for too much higher office. She's pretty much locked into a state office of some sort. So maybe it's just a point of statesmanship on her part to make a good proposal and hope to see it through.
You think she's going to run for anything else after this? If what have you heard?
Boy, everything's a possibility. She's a lawyer. She could be a Supreme Court justice. She could be a U.S. senator. Congress, I suppose, is a possibility. That would seem to be a step down from governor. It's hard to fathom it. There are a few options for her.
I think a lot of that is going to be, and I know that sounds just cagey of me even bringing it up, but I think how hard she pushes this proposal will literally tell you whether she's going to or not.
Well, the House Democrats say that they're going to start hearings on whether we have a sentencing commission or whether to reform the sentencing commission, which was it was an Engler era commission of people to propose, what they would do is take the Department of Corrections recommendations that are on the table right now, sift through them, add to them, kind of kick them around, and then put a proposal to the legislature that says, okay, these are the sentences we think should be reduced. Maybe they'll come up with some that would be increased. This is how we led to reducing reducing the mandatory lifer law for drug sentences, nonviolent drug criminals who were caught holding a whole lot of drugs. Used to be sentenced to a lifetime incarceration in our prisons on a first-time offense. They would go away pretty much forever. And that law was repealed a couple of years ago after a long education process that convinced people and even the tough-on-crime lawmakers that, yeah, this is excessive punishment. We're not accomplishing any public safety goal out of putting a nonviolent criminal away for the rest of their life for a single offense of a single drug offense. So that's what the state house is going to look into reforming this commission, and yeah, you'll see at that point whether the governor, how much support they get and how hard they push to create the sentencing commission will probably be a pretty good indication of where we're going with this.
Yeah, I think so too. It's definitely going to be interesting, and of course we may not have a lot of time to wait. Not only do we have the $1.5 to $1.8 billion budget shortfall that's being discussed, as they call it a shortfall, and as I think you properly referred to it as what they can't spend in the first place.
Right.
But you've also got something else that could really impact directly, and that's laying out on the horizon, and that's Bill McMaster's Taxpayers United Michigan is said by all intents and purposes they are probably going to file a lawsuit against the state because the state put up the Michigan's business tax, and they say that goes against the Headley Amendment, that you can't create new taxes, which is what they did. They got rid of a tax and created a whole new system, and that Headley requires a vote of the people, and they're circumventing it. So that's going to get real interesting because that could get taken seriously in the courts.
I'm not sure that it will. I'd have to look at the lawsuit, but I know Headley fairly well, the amendment, I should say, not the man. Headley requires a new tax at the local level, if I remember correctly, to require a vote of the people. It doesn't require a new tax at the state level to require a vote of the people. I've sat in the legislature and watched all sorts of new taxes get created over the last 5 or 6 years, and so I think Mr. McMaster might be off base if that's the gist of his lawsuit.
Well, that's what they're going to be filing on, so it's going to be interesting. Keep an eye on that.
Will do.
That's going to have some curiosity for all of us. If we want to learn more about this concept, Ken, where do we need to go learn more about it?
I've got an article that's going up, I believe, today, describing it on Mackinac.org, Mackinac with a C, like the island, .org. It is called Thinking Outside the Bars, and there are also, you can probably check... Well, I'm trying to think of anywhere else you could do it. I've got a lot of original sources. That's pretty much it. Go look at my article and check the references from there.
Good place to get started. Ken, I appreciate you spending some time with us. Good conversation.
All right. Thank you.